All right, so Matt, I realized this weekend that my dad, he's got the heart of a lion.
Really?
Yeah. He's also got a lifetime ban from the Fort Worth Zoo, but that's a whole nother matter. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm really doing well.
Good.
I can't complain.
Good. I can complain, but I'm not gonna.
So that, I'm just, great.
So before we get into it, we'll say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting. Go over to podbelly.com. We also want to thank tonight's sponsors, Every Plate and Fume. And we'll talk more about them coming up in the episode. While you're on the internet, you know, clearing your browser history so your significant other doesn't see it, or whatever you're doing.
Well, that's just because when you're shopping for new accessories, right, for your truck.
Right, that's it.
You
yep.
know?
Yep.
When you're looking at one of those $1,000 deck boxes.
Yeah.
You know? or, like, I can't let her see this.
Right. You know, searching for their gift or something, you know.
That's right.
That's why I cleared it. Anyway, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales and you can sign up to become a patron. We have $1, $5, and $10 levels, and we are working on something new that is going to come shortly for our $10 a month patrons. So go over there and check it out. We got a bunch of episodes, though, already on there of just random. It doesn't necessarily follow the Graveyard Tales theme. It's just a bunch of different stuff, and we got a ton of bonus episodes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we cover all kinds of stuff. We got, you know, funny stories. We got lists. We got, you know, me or Adam quizzing the other one. We've got news of the weird. Lot of fun stuff in there. They're a little bit more casual. They're a little bit shorter. So they're just a lot of fun. And like Adam said, we have a ton of them now.
And if you become a patron, you can copy that RSS link into your podcast player and get all of the bonus episodes there. So you don't necessarily have to go to patreon.com/graveyardtales every time you want to listen, but there are videos on there too. So $5 and $10 a month get videos. So go over there and check it out. Patreon.com/graveyardtales. All right, Matt. So that's all the housekeeping I got for tonight. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
So tonight, we're going to look at another haunted castle. But guess what? We don't have to leave the U.S.
Good.
Which is odd, because most of the time when we talk about a haunted castle, we're somewhere in Europe, you know? But tonight we're going to talk about Franklin Castle in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yep.
And just, I mean, like a lot of places we look at, it sits on a list that says it's one of the most haunted houses in Ohio. After doing the research, I don't doubt that. But I would definitely say it's the most haunted castle in Ohio.
Yeah, that's probably a good assessment.
Yeah. And so just for fun, I was like, yeah, how many? It's probably the only castle in Ohio. Ohio has 14 castles.
What?
Yes. I'm not going to list them, but I looked it up on a whim today.
Crazy.
14 castles in Ohio.
What's up with you Ohio people and your castles?
What are you doing up there? You know, I guess, you know, you got, I've always wanted to live in a castle.
I am lord of this farmland.
But it's a pretty amazing place. Like I said, even though it's in an unexpected location, there's a lot of activity there. But it has got some really creepy history.
It really does, yeah.
I mean, serious creepy history. So Adam's going to get into that for us tonight. So Adam, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. So as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. You can continue the research if you'd like. And, you know, we got to give shout out to the people who have gone to these places, done the hands-on research since Matt and I can't get to it. We're using their experiences and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe one day Matt and I will write an entry to one of these sources because we will have gone. But for now, check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. So Franklin Castle is also called the Hans Tiedemann House. And it's this imposing looking mansion, like Matt was saying. It's known as the Franklin Castle, though, because it's located on Franklin Boulevard in Cleveland. So the Hans Tiedemann House or the Franklin Castle, which I think I will refer to it as both throughout this episode. Yeah. So just so you know, it's the same place. I haven't lost my mind. I didn't just start calling it the Didgeridoo House or something when it's not even that. But
well, he hasn't lost his mind because he uses Franklin Castle and the Tiedemann House. He's lost his mind for other reasons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally different reasons. Unrelated to, kind of related to graveyard. Never mind. We'll keep going. So the German immigrant Hans Tiedemann, he became prosperous in the U.S. first as a wholesale grocer, and then later he became a banker, and he amassed quite a bit of money doing that, and then he built this mansion for his family. It was built between 1881 and 1883, so it took a couple years to get it built. And, you know, keep in mind when I'm talking about the history, this is all kind of happening between the early 1880s. So kind of a different time frame for the U.S. and especially for Cleveland. Now, the house was designed by the famed Cleveland architectural firm Cudell and Richardson. And the style of the house, which is a large rock-faced sandstone mansion with a round corner tower, was pretty much contemporary with architectural developments in Chicago and New York.
Man, I love that look.
Yeah, I do too.
I love it. I had a patient that has a house with that rounded corner tower.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted a house with that.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Matt would sit up in it with a bow and arrow and wait for people to deliver the mail and shoot at them.
I totally would.
Yep.
I would have Boone dressed up like a dragon. You know, it would be amazing. I would pour like hot oil down the side of it and try to climb it.
There you go.
You know, I may just do it on my current house.
Matt,
which would look absurd, but I would love it.
Matt, I know you. You would be up in that tower with a long blonde wig on, hanging it out, saying, "Climb up my hair, darling."
That'd be me.
So when the Tiedemann House was built, in the late 19th century, Franklin Boulevard was one of the most upscale residential avenues in Cleveland. They say perhaps second only to the famed Euclid Avenue's Millionaire's Row. So if something's called Millionaire's Row, and I guess if you're from Cleveland, you understand Euclid Avenue's Millionaire's Row. But if something's called Millionaire's Row and you're the next one in line, that's pretty upscale to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, for most of my life, I've lived on the 100 Airs Row. So I'm 100 Air. I can live here, dang.
I can have a mailbox. That's
It's held up by cinder blocks, but I have a mailbox, dang it. So Hans Tiedemann built this grand house on Franklin Boulevard, not only to provide a more upscale residence for his family, but it also provided a temporary place for friends, family, and others that were immigrating from Germany to stay when they first moved in Cleveland. So that's kind of cool. He used it, you know, if you were immigrating from Germany, Hans Tiedemann said, "Hey, I got spare rooms. You can stay here till you get on your feet." So that's pretty cool. Now, we'll contrast that with what happens here in a little bit, but just keep in mind, he did a good thing He had a good idea.
Yeah.
So let's keep pushing that on him. Now, the house replaced an earlier house on the property, which was raised during the construction of the new house. And I have to say, since it came up in the research, the word raised, R-A-Z-E-D.
I knew where you were going.
My whole life, I have hated that term because you can raise something to the ground before you raise a building to the sky.
Right.
I hate that. I absolutely hate it. We need to wipe that from the lexicon. R-A-I-S-E is raise. R-A-Z-E should only be included in razor. I'm using a razor on my face.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, and we wonder why immigrants come to this country and have difficulty with the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is stupid crap that doesn't need to happen in the English language. I'm sorry. And it makes no sense. You can raise something to the ground. No, you can't. You raise it above the ground.
Yep.
Raise does not mean level. Well, it does. It should not mean level. Like leveling it out. It should not. Yeah. But all right, that's my soapbox, and I will get off of it. But
dadgummit. I can't wait till we get all the English lessons in the comments.
Oh, it's going to happen. Yep. There's somebody that has already finished a tweet that I'm going to have to read when we're done with this. Well, actually, the definition of raise comes from, I'm stupid, okay? I'm stupid. I'm a redneck. Raise means to lift up. It doesn't mean to tear down. Sorry. That's it. I'll read your tweet. I just won't have a good comeback for it. So I'll just, if I ignore it, it's because I had nothing witty to say. I apologize.
He's going to demolish it.
I will raise your tweet to the ground. So Hans, his wife, Louise, their children, and Hans's mother moved into the house after they raised one house and raised the next house.
That's what the corner tower is for.
Yeah.
His mom.
Yeah. It's a mother-in-law suite kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom, get up in that tower. Mm-hmm. You made me angry one too many times. Go sit in your tower. So Hans Tiedemann sold Franklin Castle in 1896, and I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I'll go back. He sold Franklin Castle in 1896, just 1 year after his wife, Louise, died. Now, in the century that followed, the house saw many new owners and several new uses. For 47 of those years, from 1921 to 1968, the house was known as Intract Hall. And during these years, it was the home of the German-American League for Culture, which was an ethnic cultural organization that in its early years was involved in political causes, and later years it functioned as a German singing club. Now, around the time that the German club sold the house in 1968, rumors began to circulate around the west side of Cleveland that the house was haunted by the 19th century ghost of Mrs. Tiedemann and her daughter Emma. And in the mid-1970s, one owner of the house capitalized on these rumors and offered tours of, quote, haunted Franklin Castle to the public.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about him, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you will. In 1985, Michael DeVinco purchased the Tiedemann house and spent a large sum of money restoring it. DeVinco, whose stage name was Mickey Deans and who was the last husband of legendary singer and actress Judy Garland, lived in the house for over a decade. Shortly after he sold the house in 1999, the house was torched by an arsonist, and it caused substantial damage to the house. And a new owner spent a large sum of money in repairs, but as a result of the two economic recessions in the first decade of the 21st century, was unable to complete restoration of the house. Now, in 2011, the house was purchased by a European couple who made substantial progress in restoring it. So let's take a step back now. And let's look at the Tiedemann family. Who are they? What's their story? And like I said, keep in mind, Hans Tiedemann tried to do something nice by allowing German immigrants to stay in his house when they first moved to Cleveland. See if you think that negates what's coming up.
Yeah.
And by Matt's evil laugh, I'm guessing he doesn't think it does. Now, this says that all the mystery that's included in the house can be traced back to the first owners of Franklin Castle, the Tiedemann family. So Mr. Tiedemann, he was said to be a brash and harsh man. Well, he married Louise Tiedemann, and they moved into the house in 1865 with their children. On January 16th, 1881, their daughter Emma Tiedemann died in the house from diabetes at the young age of 15 years old. So she's 15 and she died in the new house. A few weeks after Emma died, Wybecka, who was Hans Tiedemann's mother, died, and her cause of death is still unknown. Between 1886 and 1888, Hans Tiedemann and his wife had to bury three more children. Their causes of death still remain unknown. So we got four people now who died with causes of death unknown. Now, I know it's the mid to late 1800s, but we get a cause of death a lot of times for people, right? You know, you see it. Even if it's assumed, well, there was no assumed cause of death.
I wonder how common that was. It sounds mysterious now.
Yeah.
But did they really delve into it that deeply? You know, if it was an older individual, they died. It didn't look like a violent death. You know, they just kind of go, eh. You know, they died.
It yep.
Could have been
natural
a heart,
causes.
Could have been a stroke.
Yep.
You know, dying of old age, you know, was not just a term. I mean, you know, there were a lot of people that were said, you know, oh, well, they just died of old age. They got old. Something went wrong. And
yep. And so, that's true. It was probably more common than we think it was, just because we're used to everything kind of being diagnosed. And if you die inexplicably now, you have an autopsy. I know they did autopsies and stuff then, but it wasn't as thorough, I'm sure, as we have now. And they couldn't check your blood chemistry and what was in your blood. So I bet you're right. I bet there was a lot of cause of death unknown, or quote, natural causes. But it's hard to do that with three kids.
Yeah.
You know, you got multiple kids in your family. Well, three of them just die, and all of them are causes of death unknown.
Yeah. Mm. It does seem a little suspicious.
It does. It does. Well, since there are a lot of facts and stories about the events that occurred inside Franklin Castle, and it's because of the high amount of death in the Tiedemann family. So just like we're sitting here speculating, people speculated even back then of why is there so much death in the Tiedemann family. There are a lot of rumors that the deaths were not by accident or from some sickness, but instead were murders committed by the supposedly cruel Hans Tiedemann. So they're saying all these deaths were because of him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the secrets continued after the deaths of Emma, Wybecka, and the three other children. There were rumors that Hans was not a faithful husband, and he tried to cheat on his wife, Louise, with other women, but the other women did not have much interest in him. So this caused him to get angry. And he was already kind of a harsh, angry man. Well, he was also accused of killing his niece on the basis that he believed she was insane. So it says in his mind, he believed he put her out of her misery. Well, Hans, this says, must have been rebuked by the fact that his niece was mentally ill and thought it was a miserable life to live. So he ended it for her. Well, among others, author Stephanie Lane had something to say about it. And she says, quote, according to legend, Hans also murdered his niece by hanging her from the rafters of a secret tunnel. And I'll talk about the secret tunnel here in a second, but she goes on to say,
it's funny. Every story you tell has got, it leads to something else that's unique about the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, well, we'll talk about the deaths here in a minute. Oh, we're going to talk about the secret passage here in a minute.
Yep. It's all twisty turny, man. Well, she goes on to say that he is also said to have killed a young servant girl on her wedding day in a fit of jealous rage and strangled one of his mistresses, end quote. So a lot of people believe that Hans Tiedemann killed both the servant girl and his mistress because he had feelings for them, but they did not feel the same about him. So he became infuriated. So in addition to the death of the two women that worked in the castle, on January 24th, 1895, Hans's wife, Louise, also met her demise, the cause of which was believed to be liver trouble. But many people believe there was more to that story than the Tiedemann family told. So during the same year Hans's wife died, Hans Tiedemann sold Franklin Castle, like I said, to the Mühlhauser family. In 1896, only a year after Hans's late wife died, he got remarried to a young waitress, but their marriage didn't last long, and they got divorced soon after the marriage. Well, in 1908, Hans Tiedemann's last living son, August, died at the age of 42. So, author Stephanie Lane, again, she stated, on January 19th, 1908, Hans Tiedemann died suddenly from a stroke while in a park at the age of 75. He has no surviving relatives, end quote. So, told you I'd talk about the secret tunnel. So let's go back to the house. Well, after the deaths of their children, it said that Hans began renovating the house in large part to take his wife's mind off of the deaths of the kids. So Hans's renovations were substantial. The entire third floor was converted into a grand ballroom, while turrets and gargoyles were added to the exterior of the already imposing home. And at one point, the house is said to have contained 30 rooms with intricate carvings added to the walls and gas lighting installed throughout the house. Well, it was during this time that the rumors began. And in addition to the official updates Hans Tiedemann made, some said he added secret passages that honeycombed the structure. All right, Matt, let's talk about one of tonight's sponsors, EveryPlate. And EveryPlate, as we've said before, is America's best value meal kit. And you can sizzle your way into the new year with $1 steak for life. All you got to do is add a 10-ounce ranch steak to your weekly order for just a dollar per box while your subscription is active. And that's raising the stakes for dinner. I'm telling.
Absolutely.
And the cool thing about EveryPlate is if you're looking to budget your food expenses this year, and who isn't in 2024? Right. I mean, food prices have gone up. Well, you can save big and eat great with America's Best Value Meal Kit. Their meals are cheaper than your average fast casual meal, so you can ditch takeout to save money while you're still enjoying fresh, satisfying meals. And they're the easiest way to eat affordably, and you can put the money you save towards making 2024 plans. Like if you want to go out of town, get you some EveryPlate and save that extra money that you would spend on meals for a vacation at the end of the year. It's well worth it. And in 2024, I know I would like to make this resolution. I know Matt would, but we got to resolve to stop stressing over what's for dinner. It's a thing that we all go through. What's for dinner? What's for dinner? You got to do it every day. Well, why not make it easy? And EveryPlate provides plenty of delicious variety with more than 25 tasty and affordable recipes that change every week. So it's easy to find something flavorful and satisfying for every meal of the day, like breakfast 24/7, 15-minute or less meals, feel-good food, and big batch faves. Plus, add even more delicious options to your order with over 25 convenient sides, breakfast items, lunches, snacks, desserts, and more.
Yeah, and not only is it a great value, it's great food, and it's a lot of fun. So this year, we had our Every Plate box come the week between Christmas and New Year's.
Good timing.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, everybody, you're tired, you're gearing up for the new year, you're worn out from Christmas. Nobody is really interested in going to the grocery store. So we had our Every Plate box come, and we had the Korean barbecue bowls.
Oh, those sound good.
They were fantastic, and Piper made it.
Nice.
Piper is 11, and she took that easy-to-read recipe card, cooked the entire meal, and it was absolutely fantastic. She had fun, and Amanda and I didn't have to cook dinner that night.
There you go.
So it was amazing. And as Adam said, it's so much less expensive than going out to a restaurant, especially when you got a pack load of kids like I do. So if you want to get great food at a great value and make your dinner time so much less stressful, all you have to do is go to everyplate.com/podcast and enter our promo code 49GRAVEYARD. That's 49GRAVEYARD. Subscription must be active to qualify and redeem the $1 steak promotion.
That's right. So you can get a meal for $1.49 plus $1 steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering our code 49GRAVEYARD. That's 49GRAVEYARD. Everyplate.com/podcast and enter our code 49GRAVEYARD. So they say that the uses of these hidden tunnels vary depending on who's telling the story. Some claim that Hans used the secret passages to conceal his sexual indiscretions, and others say it was to commit murder.
So, yeah, it could be.
There's a sordid history to this house.
That makes him out to be like a serial killer.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like he wasn't jealous. You know, that may have been the fuel that ignited his fire, but you know, serial killers, you know, that's different.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be like planning. You know, having a place to hide remains or to keep someone right. captive.
Right.
So I don't know.
I don't know either. Right.
To me, it would be just a cool thing to do to your house.
Oh, I've always wanted secret tunnels and secret rooms. Always.
I've always wanted a secret tunnel and have the big painting with the eyes, you know, so that you could kind of look out and look at everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like no one would notice, but you
right.
know.
Right.
Like, look at that. Is that Matt on the other side of that painting of Matt?
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course it would be a big picture of you.
God, there was a movie. It was a Disney movie when I was a kid. What was it called? The Private Eyes or something like that. Anyway, it was Don Knotts and Tim Conway. Do you remember this movie?
Kinda, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And it had a... They were in like an old mansion investigating, you know, a murder or murders. Mm-hmm. And so they find a secret passage and they find the place where they can look through the painting. And there were two eye holes. And so Don Knotts is looking through the person's, you know, eyes. Well, then Tim Conway has to find another spot to look. And it's like the dog. Mm-hmm. There's like a dog in the painting, in the dog's eyes. You know, he's looking through. And so whenever I think about like secret passage, that's what comes into my head.
Oh,
is,
yeah.
Is them looking through those eyes, and it's just so, so obvious, you know?
Yeah. See, I've always just wanted a I guess you'd call it a panic room.
Yeah. But
a hidden room, like behind some bookcase or something like that, or you go into a secret tunnel that goes into this room.
Yeah.
And you can hide in there, some for tornadoes. You know, I want something sturdy for tornadoes, but also somebody breaks in the house, get the wife and kid down there, or you just disappear from the wife and she can't find you.
It's have the bookcase that spins around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Put yep. the candle back.
Put the candle back.
If you get that reference, we can be friends.
Yeah, exactly. It's Frankenstein.
All right. So along with all the weirdness of, you know, the deaths in the house, the unique architecture of it, Franklin Castle, as Adam said, it wasn't just a home. You know, it was designed to house other people and to be a place for meetings and parties. But there was a lot of talk that the house was used to house Nazis. Okay. And there is a legend that says 20 people were killed in the house with machine guns because of political disagreements.
Hmm.
And now later residents claimed that they could hear the fight over and over again inside the house.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So the voices, the screams, the gunfire, all that, they could hear it, you know, just that stone tape kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And after that, the house remained vacant for a good while until it was bought in 1968 by James Romano and his family. Now, his wife had always been fascinated by the large mansion and wanted to turn it into a restaurant. But, you know, the spiritual activity in the house made sure that that never happened.
Yeah.
So the Romanos had some pretty interesting experiences while living in the house. They were busy restoring Franklin Castle, and Mrs. Romano sent the children upstairs to play. So a little while later, the four children came downstairs wanting a snack. They wanted to take an extra cookie with them to give to the sad girl who was crying upstairs.
Nope.
So can you imagine, Miss Romano is standing there and her kids are all wanting cookies and they're like, can we have an extra one for the little girl upstairs?
No, you
can't. What?
Nope.
Wait a minute. Say that again. Well, there's a little girl upstairs who's crying. So after hearing this, she had to go check it out. So she goes upstairs and she's looking around, but there's nobody there. But the children are insisting that they had been playing with other children up there, not just a little girl that had been crying. There were other kids up there as well. Now, there's a lot of speculation that these would be the spirits of the deceased Tiedemann children. You know, remember, they lost three different children there.
Technically four.
Yeah, technically four. Now, Emma died, I think, before the house.
It was like right before they moved in.
Yeah. So she died a little bit early, but still, Emma's ghost is considered to be one of the most frequent spirits that is captured there.
Mm-hmm.
But this scared Miss Romano. Quite a bit. Now, two of the older Romano children woke up one night to find something yanking the blankets off their bed.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that we've talked about before. People that, you know, are staying in like supposed haunted hotels and things like that. Somebody ripping the covers off of them. And mm-hmm. I got to thinking, you know, we've talked about how much energy it would take for a spirit to roll a ball or to turn a switch and turn a light on and off. This is ripping the covers off of somebody. If you wonder how much energy that takes, try it.
Yeah.
You know, go try to rip the covers off of somebody laying in the bed. That's a lot of energy. Okay. So, so something has got to be fueling it. If this place is really this haunted, there's got to be something there that's pumping this energy into it to allow it to rip the covers off the bed. Miss Romano, she claims that she woke up in the middle of the night only to find herself lying in the floor screaming. Okay. But there was an unseen presence screaming right beside her.
Really?
So can you imagine, you wake up, you're screaming like you just woke up out of a nightmare. and you feel something next to you and hear it screaming with you.
Yeah, that would freak me out. I'd be screaming even more.
That's right. It's like the things where, like, somebody, the movies where somebody's scared, ah, and then the other one, ah, and they just go back and forth. You know, that's what it would be, except this other voice is just screaming along with her. Crazy.
That's nuts, man.
The Romanos also said that organ music would fill the house on a regular occasion, but the Romanos didn't even own an organ.
Hmm. So it's not the...
Yeah. You know,
it's not even the ghost sitting there playing a piano that they have.
Right.
You know, they don't have an organ, but there's organ music going.
And that's yeah. And I'm thinking, man, you know, it'd be one thing to have a piano, but a full on organ.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and to hear that, I mean, that's an organ would be the creepiest music you could hear in your house.
Other than banjos, I agree. Yeah.
Banjos would be pretty creepy too. The Romanos also reported footsteps, the sound of glasses, you know, knocking together, turning ceiling lamps, and the family decided, okay, we got to get some help. We can't handle this. There's too much going on. So they looked for help from paranormal investigators. So during one of these investigations, one of the investigators actually ran out of the house screaming. Okay.
I mean, something next to them screaming on the way out too.
Must be. It's like, we're going to scream with you. Yeah. We love screaming.
We're scared too. I don't know what we're scared of, but we're scared too.
You know, and I'm not going to call him out, but anyway, when you scream at a dog to quit barking,
yeah.
Okay, the dog thinks, oh, cool, we're both barking.
Yep.
So that's what I think in my head, you know, oh, they're screaming, I'll scream too, this spirit. Yep. You're like, yay, we're both screaming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, to spook a paranormal investigator, you know, even in the 60s, early 70s, that's quite a bit. You know, that by this time people had kind of figured out, you know, oh, we're going to go on a ghost hunt, you know? So you'd think maybe they had experienced something that was freaky before.
You would think,
but this got them. So where do you go? If the paranormal investigators can't help, where do you turn next?
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, pretty much. No. Okay. No. A priest.
Yep. That makes more sense than Scooby-Doo.
So they bring a priest in and ask him to perform an exorcism. Okay, let's take a second and talk about tonight's sponsor, Fume. Now, it's the new year. Everybody's looking at changing something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they made a resolution. And kicking a bad habit is one of the most common things people decide, I'm going to change this about myself for the new year, okay? And cold turkey may work great on sandwiches, but when it comes to breaking bad habits, that's why usually by February, people's New Year's resolutions are in the trash.
Yeah.
Because I can't make a switch that fast. Well, Fume looks to make breaking that bad habit a little bit easier. Now, if you don't know, Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that helps with breaking bad habits. So instead of vapor, it uses flavored air. And instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. So you get it. You replace the bad with the good.
Right.
And it's a habit that you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habit a lot easier. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets so you can kind of fidget it. It feels cool in your hands, it clicks and so forth. So, you know, if you've got that, I've got to do something with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
This gives you something pretty cool to mess with.
Right. And I was skeptical of that at first, you know, because I'm not a fidget toy kind of guy. But I'll be honest with you, it's weighted really well. It's nice and heavy, and it's smooth finish. It feels good in your hand. And the little tactile stuff, the clicky airflow and the magnet thing, I've actually found myself doing that a lot when I was, you know, trying to kick my habit. I'm sitting there tick, 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 snap, 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 snap with the thing just unknowingly. So it works. It really does work for something to do with your hands. And the taste of the fume is really cool. It's got a bunch of different flavors, but the one I picked had like an herbal taste to it with a little bit of black pepper in it. And it was a good substitute for what I'm used to. And all you're doing is breathing in this flavored air, like Matt was saying. So you're not getting any of that bad stuff in there. And it looks really cool too. Like I said, it's made with real wood and real metal. And you've got to look at and try the new Solano fume. It's made with premium walnut barrel, and it's got an onyx-coated mouthpiece that has a slightly softer finish. So a little softer on your lips, a little softer on the fingertips when you're playing with it, and it looks really cool. And right now is the best time to start a good habit with fume. All orders for the month of January have buy one, get one cores, so you can stock up for that New Year's resolution. Plus, as a listener of the show, you get an extra 10% off when you use our code. Head to tryfume.com/tales, that's T-A-L-E-S, and use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S, for an additional 10% off, plus BOGO cores until January 31st to help make starting the good habit that much easier. That's tryfume, tryfume.com/tales, and use our code TALES for an additional 10% off, plus BOGO cores until January 31st.
So the priest told them that there were evil spirits in the house, and that they should leave because the spirits were too powerful to remove.
Oh, wow.
And you know what they did?
They stayed.
They left. Oh. In 1974, the Romanos moved out. You know,
that's smart.
They beat feet because, it was just too much. And when you think about this, all the stuff that this family experienced, I'd move out too.
Yeah, probably so.
Now, the house
I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid. I'd get out of there.
That's right. Well, I'll stick around. At the worst, you can't sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And if I can't sleep, I can't stay.
No, I'm with you.
But the house was then sold to Sam Muscatello. Now, initially, Muscatello wanted to turn the building into a church. But the ghost stories that had already come out about Franklin Castle didn't lend to him being able to put a church in there.
Yeah.
Okay. So he decided to turn it into a tourist attraction, which Adam touched on earlier. So this is the guy, Sam Muscatello. He was the one that decided, well, if this house is haunted, let's try and make a buck off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he opened the house to the public, and he would give people tours. Now, he says fearless people could also spend the night. He really wanted to make a profit out of the ghost stories. He was so intrigued by all the secret passageways and tunnels, he decided to explore the house. So in one of the hidden rooms, guess what he found?
Uh-oh. I don't want to know. I don't think.
Human bones.
Yep.
Human bones. So, you know, he took this story to the media because, you know, you don't think his house is haunted? You don't think you want to come see my haunted house? We found human bones in this house.
See,
so
I'm
don't tell
that,
me it's not haunted.
I'm worried that he went to the media before the police, though.
It didn't really say, but I mean, you know, I don't know. Nowadays, if you find human remains, everything becomes a lockdown. I mean,
Yep.
You know, it's not like you're going to walk around and make a cane out of somebody's femur or nothing. You know, you don't get to do
you
that.
You can't?
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore?
Well, no.
Oh. Yeah, I've never done that. But
that one you got's okay, though.
Oh, okay, good. Shoo.
And as Adam pointed out, it seemed a little suspicious. Some people claimed that he was the one that placed the bones himself, trying to garner more attention for his haunted house tours.
Unfortunately, I could see that because of what we've seen people do.
Right. So I did some digging, and sure enough, you know, there was a partial skeleton found in the house. So there were human remains there. Where do you get human remains to place the bones yourself? I mean, so you're either accusing him of being a grave robber,
right,
or a murderer,
right?
You know, I mean, and I don't know where else, you know, you would get human bones, but it's probably not legal, you know, not enough to shove them in and pretend that you found them.
Yeah, because nowadays, you know, there are oddity shops that I have visited that they do get, like, classrooms that had actual human skeletons for anatomy. They'll sometimes sell those and get fake ones, and then these oddity shops end up with them. But I don't know if then it was the same. So I don't think you could go, you know, somebody donated their body to science, it ended up in a classroom, and now it ends up in an oddity shop. And then it ends up in somebody like me's house.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was the same then. I'm not 100% sure.
You probably not. But realize we're just talking about the 70s. So it wasn't right. Like, you know, that it was 100 years ago.
Yeah. But I just don't know when they allowed that to be a thing, if the 70s was.
Yeah. Well, it was probably a lot more lax, you know, as far as being able to buy, you know, human remains from, you know, a university, get a skull or something. When I was in college back in the early 90s, we had in anatomy class, we had a human skeleton, and we had other human bones as well. You really just looked at them. You didn't pick them up because we were informed quite often how much it costs to replace the human bones. Now, we had tons of plaster bones, you know, that were made from molds that you could use for study purposes. There was a benefit to being able to actually see what it looked like as real bone. But you didn't want to accidentally drop it because they were quite fragile. You know, those your living bone is very strong, you know, a preserved skull that's been sitting around for 40 years is not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know from just the animal skulls that I've got, when you clean them and, you know, it's not living tissue anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff in the center of it, the marrow and the gelatinous stuff that's adding to the shock absorption of the bone, when that's gone, and then you clean it, the cleaning makes it brittle, doesn't have any shock absorption. You can break, like, I've got bobcat skulls that I got from a taxidermist that are some of the most fragile ones I've got besides, you know, like fish bones. They are super fragile because they've been cleaned. And so that's why all of mine are in glass cases behind me so they don't get messed up.
Yeah. So with your knowledge of bones and preserving bones and things like that, you would be the one that would be able to answer this. So he finds these human bones, and people are saying, hey, he put them there himself probably to get more business for his haunted house. But my thought is if he got human bones, if he purchased them and put them there, that would not look, those bones wouldn't look like what natural bones from a decaying corpse would look like if you came across them. You know,
not at all. Not
I mean,
at all.
You know, I've seen your collection many times, and you know, they're clean. You know, they've been bleached.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that they have that white appearance. Bones that were just laying there because of natural, you know, decay, they wouldn't look like that.
No, I've got a couple deer legs that I found that I did not bleach heavily. I sterilized, but didn't bleach the same way.
Yeah.
And they have a dark hue to them, a brownish hue to them from, like you said, the decaying of the flesh. Mm-hmm. From just sitting in soil for a while. And they weren't even there probably a year, you know, is probably from the previous mating season or whatever that they were there. If these things were there for decades upon decades, they're going to be, even in an undisturbed thing, you're going to have broken pieces. They're going to look gross. There's a calcification.
Mm-hmm.
Or a mineralization that happens to bones that are buried for a while. You know, it's think about fossils.
Mm-hmm.
They're not bone anymore. They're rock that took the place of this bone because the minerals leached in, and then the calcium in the bones went away and preserved that bone structure.
Mm-hmm.
You will have some of that depending on the age of the bone. The bone will be a different composition and look different than fresh bone.
Yeah.
So if he got fresh bone, I'm sure somebody would have gone, dude, that looks cleaned and well preserved. And why does it have wire on the hinge? You know,
that's right. It looks like you could hold it up and pose it. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So I thought, based on what, you know, the documented history of the house, it makes sense that, you know, he could potentially find real human remains.
Yeah, sure.
But either way, whether he placed them or he found them, it didn't bring any more business into his haunted house.
That's a bummer.
But the weird stories kept coming. Okay. So Muscatello, he sold the house, but the strange occurrences that his guests had written in the guest book, they were still pretty fascinating. And it also added a little bit more light to Tiedemann's activity while he was alive.
Mm.
Okay. So one of the most frequent spirits seen is the woman in black. And she is seen in the tower room from time to time. She looks out the window. People on the street have reported seeing a woman in black looking out of the window. And these are like turret windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, you know, Adam said, you know, I'd be up there shooting an arrow. So they're turret windows and they can see her, you know, looking out at the people on the street. Now, there are two different ideas as to who this might be. This article says that it's said to be the ghost of Rachel, who was a maid who really didn't want to have anything to do with, you know, Tiedemann and his advances. And so it was determined that she was most likely strangled by Tiedemann because people have a sensation of feeling like they're being choked.
Yeah.
When they get in that room.
Yeah.
So not only are people seeing a spirit from the outside through the window, guests and visitors that go up there report this sensation of being choked.
And we hear that all the time.
We sure do. I mean, we sure do. You know, you know, that's like, I feel like I've got hands around my neck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is enough for making me, I'm not going up there. Okay.
Nope.
I'll go, I'll look, I'll see if I see a ghost. But if I'm going to get choked when I get up there, I'm out.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, people who have spent the night in Franklin Castle claim to have heard a woman suffocating. But when they go up there, they can't find anyone there. So I'm suffocating was the word that was used in this article. I always think of suffocating as, you know, it's something over your face.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that sound like? I don't know. But the sound of someone being strangled, like with hands around it, that's very distinct, you know? So either way, they're hearing this, they go and investigate, nobody's there. The other idea is that the woman in black could be Mrs. Teedman herself. Either way, you know, probably won't ever know, but this is the most frequently spotted spirit in the castle. Now, a Cleveland radio host named John Webster described his visit to Franklin Castle. And this is a cool one because I've never heard anything like this happening. He said something snatched his tape recorder and threw it down the stairs.
Really?
He said, I just stood there holding the microphone as I watched the tape recorder go flying down to the bottom of the stairs where it broke into pieces.
Huh.
I'm like, yeah, there you go. That is a ghost story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And, you know, being a radio host, surely he's, you know, he's wanting to play this up, but I'm like, you know, he wasn't in there by himself. Surely somebody would have seen him throw his own tape recorder down there.
And yeah,
I can't imagine he would have done that. You know, he's trying to record, get some evidence up there. But that was pretty cool. It's the first time I've heard something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No.
And again, that's one of those things that takes a lot of energy.
A lot of energy, you know, to grab something. It's one thing to push something over, but to grab something from somebody and then throw it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that takes some juice right there. Now, the spirit of the 13-year-old niece of Hans Teedman is said to haunt the house as well. Now, her name was Karen, and she was hanged in one of the tunnels behind the ballroom because she was insane. Let that sink in.
Yeah.
Didn't hang herself. She was hanged for being insane.
Yeah.
So Teedman claimed that he wanted to put the girl out of her misery. But in truth, as the story goes, so I don't know how much truth is this, but the story is that he caught her in bed with one of his grandsons.
Hmm.
At 13?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now, this next one, I included it, but I couldn't verify it anywhere else. And there's not any additional details. There is the story that someone was killed in the room, in one of the rooms, with an axe, and that 12 baby corpses were found in a secret room.
Jeez.
Now, here's the thing. The stuff about Muscatello and finding the bones, that's all over. I mean, it's you can find that instantly. And multiple stories about it. There's not anything else really about, you know, them finding 12 baby corpses in there at any time in history. But there are rumors that a doctor briefly lived in the house after Teedman, and he had done experiments on babies. And the sound of crying babies is frequently heard and reported. So to me, and you tell me what you think, Adam, the babies crying, like I said, it is very commonly, but you got to remember, 3 children died in that house. Okay.
Yeah.
So that seems to go along with that. Not the mass murder of a dozen babies. This sounds like a really creepy legend, that was developed because of the baby crying experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. But, you know, there was also, there's, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think Thomas Jefferson's home, they found multiple skeletons in what would have been his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So what it turned out was his son-in-law worked at a place that studied like people after they died. And then after they died, he buried them there in the backyard. So if this doctor worked with infants, maybe he buried them there.
Maybe. And it may not have been as gruesome as, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, you got to remember what it says. Someone was killed with an axe. It didn't say that these babies were killed.
Right.
It just says that baby corpses were found. It doesn't say they were murdered. So, you know, you add in, well, he was doing experiments on the babies. What if he wasn't?
Mm-hmm.
What if he was trying to save babies and mm-hmm. they died and, you know, grief-stricken parents didn't know what to do and or couldn't afford to have a real burial.
Right.
And, you know, he says, don't worry about it. You know,
I'll take care of it.
You don't have to be stressed with this. I mean, there's numerous things that would make this not, you know, something just horrifying, but right. still that aspect of hearing the babies crying is there. You know, it's widely reported, but it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's gruesome. That's why I think this is kind of embellished a little bit, to make it sound a lot more scary than it actually is.
Sure.
But I'm here to tell you, you don't have to tell me anything. If I'm in a house and there's no babies and I'm hearing babies crying, that's scary enough. Just leave it at that.
Yep. For sure. For sure.
Now, Michael DeVinco, who Adam talked about earlier, he was the last husband of Judy Garland. He also had some experiences while living in the house. He was quoted in the newspaper as saying, "We've had a lot of incidents of poltergeists in the house." He said, "But they have slowed down their activity." He went on to explain that he thought the activity was due to the renovations he had made to the house, but that the spirits must have eventually accepted him as being, quote, old man Tiedemann. So like the spirits were buddies with Tiedemann or something. But the DeVinco family lived in the house until 1999, and they did not offer tours, but Michael told the newspaper that they routinely received calls from people hoping to get a look at the secret passageways or to see how the mirrors in the home would mysteriously fog up. And that is one thing about the research for this. And I mentioned it when Adam was talking about how you talk about one thing and it leads to something else.
Yeah.
You know, nowhere else had I seen the mirrors would fog up mysteriously. Okay. Until I read the newspaper article that quotes Michael DeVinco. And he was mm-hmm. like, or how the mirrors fog up. Wait, what? That's something new. So it's like I'm reading one story and I learned something new from it that hadn't been discussed before.
It's weird when you stand in front of the mirror and breathe, it tends to fog up. It seems weird.
Yeah. But you think about it. If you're staring at a mirror in a living room or a dining room mm-hmm. and you're back away from it, you're not expecting to see it fog up.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. Now during one paranormal investigation, an apparition was caught on a static video camera running across the field of view. That spirit is suspected to be Emma Tiedemann, the daughter of Hans and Louise, the one that died from diabetes right as the house was right as they were about to move in. Now, the castle has been featured on TV shows Paranormal Lockdown, Ghost Adventures, and The Holzer Files. So, you know, there's a lot of material out there. There's a lot to read. There's a lot to watch. I watched a couple documentaries about the house. It's a fascinating place. And I'm sure, you know, the listeners we've got in Cleveland, they may know a few more stories, but they've definitely probably seen it or at least been by it. I mean, it's not hidden away. I mean, it's right there in town. So, you know, that's a pretty cool aspect of it too. I think, you know, just being right here. You know, it's just, hey, it's right there in town. Hey, you know that house right there? It's haunted.
Yep. The creepy looking castle house.
Yeah.
It's haunted.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the the current owners are continuing their restoration, but the house is open for tours now, and there are 4 rooms available for staying overnight. They also offer paranormal investigation packages for private nighttime ghost hunts. So, and I told Adam, check out their website. They have events there, you know, pretty regularly, but the website itself is really neat. It's completely interactive. It gives you a lot of the background of the house itself and the things that go on. And, you know, there's a whole calendar of events that they do. But really, really cool place. So if you live in Cleveland and you've never gone by there, give it a shot now, because I know depending on who was living there, you may or may not have been able to go and tour it or really even get close to it, because you don't want to wander up in somebody's yard, you know, if they're not wanting, you know, visitors, you know, don't do that. But, you know, the current owners are beginning to open this thing up, and, you know, there's tours available. And you can stay overnight. Like I said, there's 4 rooms where you can stay and, you know, have a shot at really experiencing something, you know, bizarre. And based on the stories that we've covered tonight, I mean, it sounds like this place is legit. I mean,
yeah,
you know, even if it's not as over the top as some of these stories sound, a lot of people, you know, that have lived in that house have said, yeah, this is the stuff that goes on here, you know, and, you know, how many times have we seen people that have this amazing amount of haunted activity in a home, and they move out, and then the new people move in, and they've been there for like 20 years, and like, yeah, nothing happens.
Yeah.
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 Well, the ceiling fan makes a funny noise, but we got some WD-40 and that fixed it, you know, so ghost debunked.
Yeah.
But not so with Franklin Castle. You know, new people buy the property, they move in, they experience some stuff. You know, they finally leave, other people move in, they experience some stuff. So it just seems like it still goes on today. Pretty cool place. And I was not aware that this place existed, really. But certainly not a castle in the middle of Cleveland, Ohio.
Right.
And I sure as hell didn't know that Ohio had 14 castles.
No, I didn't know that either. That's kind of wild.
I mean, Tennessee's got a few. I've seen a couple of them.
Yeah, Texas has a few.
Yeah, but, you know, I didn't realize Ohio was 14. So
yeah,
that's pretty great.
I think y'all are overdoing it. Y'all are overdoing it on the castle thing. If you could back down a little bit.
That's right. You know, it's not like, you know, we've got European history, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of, you know, history where castles were built, you know, all this stuff. No, you know, it's like, you know, 1700s, you know, yeah, let's build a castle.
Yeah.
But if you have heard some stories of Franklin Castle, if you're one of our listeners in the Cleveland area or in Ohio, and you know somebody that's experienced something at the Franklin Castle, or you've had an experience there, let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, search Graveyard Tales. We call our group the Graveyard. Thousands of people are in there sharing personal experiences, sharing their dad jokes. Some people even asking for help because they're having, you know, a weird disturbance in their house. You know, we've seen that too. Jump in there. It's a private group, so you're not going to have to worry. If you want to share a really great story, nobody's going to call you nuts or crazy or a weirdo. We all just want to hear these really cool stories. Then you can check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And on our website, you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and you can become a patron. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, we've got some big news coming out for our $10 patrons. So be on the lookout for that. It's coming really, really soon. You know, and Adam and I are pretty excited about it. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, because it brings us up the charts a little bit and it makes it easier for people to find the graveyard. So, pretty cool place, Franklin Castle. Go check it out. And until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.